Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Negotiators push to extend the Israel-Hamas truce. Plus, Black Friday sales increase, though how shoppers paid for gifts leaves some retailers in limbo. And finally, some good climate news as green tech tops expectations.
Renewable energy is growing much faster than people expected even a few years ago. Solar power, wind power are continuing to get cheaper, and that means they're continuing to provide more of our electricity.
It's Monday, November 27th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. A truce between Israel and Hamas is entering its final day as negotiators discuss a possible extension of the deal. The four-day agreement has halted fighting and seen Hamas release dozens of hostages in exchange for Palestinian prisoners held in Israel. Journal Middle East correspondent Stephen Kalin is in Doha, and he joins me now to discuss how the original agreement has held up as well as what comes next. Stephen, what is left to accomplish from this original deal at this point? We're getting close to the end, are we not?
Yeah, we're already in the last 24 hours of this four-day ceasefire, which was designed at the beginning to have flexibility for being extended. So by the way the deal was designed, after the first 4 days, if Hamas comes up with around 10 hostages, they can earn another day of a ceasefire. And so we are currently in the process of finalizing the fourth day of hostage exchange and prisoner release, because that's the other part of this deal, is that three Palestinian prisoners are to be released from Israeli prisons in exchange for each hostage that Hamas releases. So that's all being worked out. And this has been a sort of a daily process for the last 3 days.
So Stephen, what comes next? We heard from President Biden yesterday saying he'd like to see the ceasefire extended. What specifically is the U.S. pushing for here, and what have the parties to the deal said about the prospect of this going on?
Yeah, so it seems like everybody who's party to this deal, including all the various negotiators, including the U.S., Qatar, Egypt, are interested in seeing this extended. There have been statements to that effect. Israel has said that once it gets the hostages out, it's going to resume the war. Hamas and some of the Arab negotiators are hoping that this basically paves the way for a permanent ceasefire and an end to this conflict, and then probably into some sort of political track. It's unclear if Israel will accept that. It's unclear what the U.S. position will end up being. Biden said yesterday that he was asked about how long this temporary ceasefire should be extended, and he hesitated and then came up with an answer, which was as long as there are hostages coming out. And so that gives you a sense of the sort of position that the U.S. is straddling between wanting to support Israel in its war effort, but also there is a sense that this should pave the way for a permanent ceasefire and that this is an opportunity to end this conflict.
And Stephen, there are Americans still being held. How is that factoring into things?
That's right. There's still a number of Americans being held in Gaza, and the Biden administration has made it a priority to try to get them out. They have been engaged in diplomacy with Israel and as well as Qatar and Egypt to work on that. And it's definitely one of the driving factors for this administration. They also have said that they're keen to limit Palestinian casualties. Those have reached almost 15,000 deaths, according to health authorities in Hamas-run Gaza. The other factor here is that we've seen an uptick in violence and tensions in the U.S., both anti-Semitic and Islamophobic attacks in the past 2 months, sort of on the back of this conflict. And there's a lot of fear that in the U.S., that the longer this conflict drags on, the worse that situation could get.
And finally, Stephen, you are in Doha, Qatar. The Qataris are being mediators in this truce, along with the Egyptians. And you mentioned earlier hostages being held by Hamas and other groups. What of those other groups whose role in all of this has got to be a complex one?
There's not a lot of clarity, I would say, around all the hostages that are being held. The attack on October 7th obviously took everybody by surprise. In all of that confusion, a lack of information about who exactly was taken, who was killed, and who remains alive. A lot of the hostages were, of course, taken by Hamas. There's also Islamic Jihad and some other militant groups. And then there were reports of sort of ordinary people who live nearby the border and streamed across on October 7th, seeing this opportunity and, you know, may have seized people and brought them home. That complicates having a good sense of the numbers and knowing where all these people are. One of the goals of the ceasefire over the past 4 days has been to give Hamas the opportunity to go around and identify who the hostages are, who holds them, and to get some sort of control over them so that they can be part of future exchange. At the moment, we're sort of running headlong into this issue with the extension of the truce. So far, there's a group of 50 to be released during this initial 4 days. Those names they had before the deal started. Now we're getting into the point of gathering more names and gathering more hostages and seeing whether those can be released in exchange for an extension of the ceasefire.
That was Wall Street Journal Middle East correspondent Stephen Kalin in Doha. Stephen, thank you so much for the update.
Glad to be with you.
Okay, let's shift gears now and do some Black Friday math. According to MasterCard Spending Pulse, U.S. retail sales in store and online rose 2.5% compared to last year, with sales of jewelry and apparel, as well as spending on sporting events and restaurants helping to lead the way. Though there is always more to the story than the top-line data suggests, and Journal reporter Patricia Kausman is here to help sort through the messy post-holiday store aisles. Patricia, retailers must be pleased to see signs American shoppers are, in fact, shelling out on holiday purchases. But how they pay has a major bearing on retailers, and we are evidently seeing some notable changes there. Tell us about them.
Yes, indeed. What we are seeing is that people are increasingly uninterested in getting those store-specific credit cards, which have been quite lucrative source of revenue for retailers. So while they be making more money on one side, they seem to be losing on the other. The reason for that is people just don't carry credit cards around as much, and they are increasingly using other types of financing venues to purchase their items. So for example, one of those buy now, pay later offers, it's become increasingly popular. And I mean, let's not forget that interest rates are rising. And when it comes to these retailers' credit cards, they actually go beyond the regular credit card interest rate that's offered. So in some cases, they are surpassing 30%. And of course, that's shying people away from actually using those credit cards. For retailers, that is losing a nice chunk of money because they get interest on those cards.
And Patricia, it's Cyber Monday now, a major e-commerce holiday. Of course, many online orders need to make it to people's homes, and we are exclusively reporting this morning that Amazon has now grabbed the crown of biggest delivery business in the U.S. by parcel volume, and it's on track to widen the gap over UPS and FedEx, according to internal Amazon data and people familiar with the matter. What effect is that having on these businesses?
Amazon CFO, he actually said in a recording earlier this month that delivery speed improvements have actually been a key driver of growth for Amazon. So that speaks to just how important them getting this right is. And of course, it has consequences to the UPS and FedEx business. For instance, UPS has been leaning into delivering parcels from customer segments that are not sort of the residential one. So for example, healthcare and small businesses. FedEx, meanwhile, trying to focus on the e-commerce market beyond Amazon. FedEx parted ways with Amazon in 2019, although UPS continues to deliver for Amazon, and the Amazon accounts for about 11% of its revenue still. So like these players are adapting based on how successful Amazon has been in just creating this huge logistics enterprise.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Patricia Kausman. Patricia, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Coming up, states allege that Meta designed products to capitalize on teen vulnerabilities. Plus, investors increase their bets on future rate cuts. We've got those stories and more after the break.
I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Newly unredacted legal filings show that Facebook parent Meta designed products to take advantage of known weaknesses in the brains of its young users. In one internal Meta presentation in 2020, the company sought to engineer Facebook and Instagram to capitalize on parts of youth psychology that render teens, quote, predisposed to impulse, peer pressure, and potentially harmful, risky behavior, end quote. The presentation also referenced how its products were well-suited to providing teens with feel-good dopamine effects, their desire for which was described as insatiable. References to the documents have been released as part of a suit brought by 41 states and the District of Columbia, alleging that Meta intentionally built its social platforms with addictive features that harm young users, a claim that Meta denies. Wall Street is gearing up for rate cuts, with investors now believing there's a much greater chance the Federal Reserve will cut rates in the next 4 months than raise them again. According to CME Group data, interest rate futures indicated last week a roughly 60% chance that the Fed will lower rates by a quarter of a percentage point by its May 2024 policy meeting, up from 29% at the end of October. The bullish sentiment is being backed up by the latest U.S. inflation data, along with recent comments from some Fed officials suggesting that a soft landing for the economy is achievable. At the same time, analysts have been positively surprised by the latest earnings season, with the majority of companies in the S&P 500 now having reported their third quarter results. Overall, they showed net profit margins moved up over 12% during the quarter, according to FactSet, while at the same time, companies are cutting expenses. So what does this latest earnings season tell us about where the market is headed? The Journal's Spencer Jacob told our podcast WSJ's Take on the Week.
You can't cut forever. Companies have been cutting expenses, and the top line should be growing. I think that people underestimated how smart executives can be when they take action and how many levers they have to pull individually at companies. But overall, profitability is, if you look at the level of operating profits to revenue or operating profit margin of the S&P 500, they're actually pretty high historically.
And what do you say we end the show with some good climate news? Because after months of reporting on how investments into green energy are dropping, or how automakers are fretting over demand for EVs, it turns out that globally, green technology growth is far outpacing forecasts. In one notable example, journal editor Ed Ballard told us that falling implementation costs and improving technology have made solar and wind power better able to compete on the grid.
Last year, more than 4/5 of all of the new power generating capacity in the world was renewables. And this year, according to Bloomberg New Energy Finance, something close to 400 gigawatts of solar power alone is going to be installed around the world. And to put that in context, that's nearly a 20th of all of the power plants that exist in the world, roughly speaking. And what the optimist will say is, on that trajectory, it's just a matter of time before this enormous addition of renewable energy capacity will start subtracting from the amount of fossil fuels we consume and the amount of emissions we create.
And that is What's News for Monday morning. Today's show was produced by Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff. And I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. Until then, thanks for listening.
Enter a revolutionary business world where AI meets power with Intel Core Ultra and Intel vPro. Imagine PCs that boost productivity, creativity, and collaboration with cutting-edge AI. They're gateways to innovation, engineered with powerful AI performance, hardware-based security, and AI-powered threat detection. Plus, they're built sustainably and can be managed remotely. Transform your workflow with Intel Core Ultra and Intel vPro today. No product can be absolutely secure. Become an IT hero at intel.com/ITheroes.